I'm Lori Zager, and I'm here with my partner, Lisa James. This is the Nest Egg Podcast. We are 2X Wealth Group, a team at Ingalls & Snyder, which is an independent registered investment advisor. Today, we are going to talk about something we wrote for the fourth quarter called Mixed Messages.
Yes, and it's our fourth quarter review as well as our 2024 outlook. If you're interested in seeing the written version on our website, it is 2xwealth.ingalls.net. We thought we'd start out with a famous quote. According to the famous economist John Kenneth Galbraith, we have two classes of forecasters: those who don't know and those who don't know they don't know. And his comments really seem to apply to last year after a lot of negative economic indicators caused investment professionals to predict a recession that never happened. The other interesting thing about 2024 is that we finally found a shift in rhetoric from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. He had been stalwart for most of 2023 about not cutting rates, about the possibility of raising rates in the future if inflation didn't cool, and he really didn't give the market any opportunity to run very far on speculation of rate cuts without slapping them down. And what happened in December is that he actually said his base policy is now no more rate hikes. And the market was very enthusiastic about that, particularly since, as a group, the Fed governors said they expected to cut rates three separate times in 2024. And those statements led to a further rally in December of about another 5 or 6%. And the stock market bringing the full year return to 26.3%.
But I'm not going to give the golden globe, so to speak, to Jerome Powell. It goes to Janet Yellen. I'm sorry. She learned a lot from Congress. She can kick the can down the road with the best of them. In October, with the 10-year bond reaching 5% and the bond vigilantes convinced that rates were going higher, she did something pretty tricky. She had a huge amount of U.S. debt financing, and everybody presumed that she was going to issue a lot of 10-year bonds. And instead, what she did is she increased the short end of the curve, the Treasury bills, and decreased the long-term issuance, the 2 to 10 years. And so that removed that supply pressure. So she had a good auction on her hands. She took the pressure off the 10-year rates for now, but our 10-year debt is continuing to grow. One of the pundits we read said that the U.S. is shooting itself in the fiscal foot by failing to restrain fiscal spending and by managing duration on Treasury debt in ways emerging markets usually do. Sell as much as you can on the short end of the curve. In other words, kick it down the road.
Exactly. After that beautiful rally in 2023, people actually are continuing to be very enthusiastic about the economy in 2024. In fact, most experts now really anticipate a soft landing, an economic soft landing. And what that means is that everything kind of goes right. You get slowing inflation, you get just moderate growth in the economy, and you get fairly stable unemployment. Now, unemployment might rise a bit, but not enough to put the Fed on alert, worrying that too many people are losing their jobs. So what happened in the fourth quarter of 2023 is that the economic data really consolidated a number of positive trends that happened along these three lines, you know, about growth, unemployment, and inflation. So if we first look at inflation, as measured by the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. That's what's used to, for example, adjust Social Security payments. You know, people follow that fairly closely. That rate fell from 9% in 2022 to 3.9% in 2023. And while that rate has not yet declined to the Fed's target, we are definitely headed in the right direction.
But that doesn't mean that prices are going down. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I think people are so unhappy with the current administration, because they see that their prices in the grocery store or at the gas pump, even though gas has really come down, so that's not a good example, but food is a good example. Food prices are not going down, but they're going up more slowly. Let's put it that way. But it still hurts. It still costs more to eat.
People still go to the store and, you know, think that everything costs too much, because we had a lot of inflation in 2022. And even though inflation was slower in 2023, prices are still rising and people are unhappy about how much things cost. Nobody wants deflation. While you might think, oh, yeah, it'd be really great if prices fell, a deflationary environment in general is just a horror scenario for the economy and employment. So we're not going to go there. Point number two, if we look at the economy, what we saw in the fourth quarter is a slowdown from the 4.9% growth rate in the third quarter to 3.3%. And that rate is much closer to kind of a moderate economic growth that doesn't cause a lot of inflation. I mean, if you look at historical growth in the U.S., it's generally been between 2 and 3%. So that's something that makes the Fed a little bit more comfortable and actually might have contributed to Powell's willingness to say that he doesn't expect any more rate hikes. And lastly, unemployment has been incredible. It's remained under 4%. It was 3.7% in 2023. And this rate is quite low by historical standards. And so even if we do see a little bit of an uptick, if the economy slows, something around 4% again is a very comfortable level as far as the Fed is concerned.
So in economic terms, you probably hear soft landing, but a lot of stock market pundits call it the Goldilocks scenario. In other words, the inflation is not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just right. Lisa and I put our heads together and thought, well, what could derail this positive scenario?
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, even though inflation has fallen, particularly for goods, services inflation is very sticky. And part of the reason for that is that, you know, we generally have a shortage of labor, particularly for lower paid services jobs. So it's pretty hard to envision inflation going substantially lower unless wages fall or productivity increases quite a bit. And we have had some pretty good productivity. So if the same person produces more, you can pay them more without having inflation. And some people think that AI and other technological advances can help keep productivity rates high.
But, you know, the last part of inflation is really the last mile is the hardest to bring down. We've got charts in a number of our blogs showing that. And there are a lot of things that could cause commodity prices to go back up. Geopolitical crisis, conflict in the Red Sea has already disrupted shipping and causing transportation rates to go up. And you're starting to hear about this. Well, just when everybody thought Goldilocks was here, we got last Tuesday a reversal in both the CPI and then later in the week, the PPI number. So one is the consumer price index and the other is the producer price index. And they both, instead of continuing the slowly down ticking, if you will, they both ticked up again. And so that really caused some problems for those in the Goldilocks camp, and the market really got hurt last week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it went down a little bit.
On Tuesday. You know, Tuesday.
Yeah. It wasn't a very dramatic market reaction.
Well, it didn't last. Yeah. Is the main thing. Yeah. It didn't last.
Yeah.
But things like this can happen. And
yeah, it's definitely not a straight line. I mean, you just don't have continually, you know, falling inflation rates. You're going to have a little to-ing and fro-ing. And honestly, I think that's a big part of why the Fed has been pretty slow to act. I mean, they've got a tough balancing act to do, because if they cut rates too soon, they can cause a resurgence in inflation. And that was something that we saw in the 70s, 80s period. And that is the thing that Jerome Powell wants to avoid most in the world. But on the other hand, if they really wait too long, the Fed can keep rates up and actually cause an economic slowdown that leads to a recession. Right now, I think that Fed is just trying to pursue a stable policy, which is they're waiting, they're looking to see what's going on, they're showing a willingness to cut rates, but they're not rushing into it. And I think the reason for that is that Powell knows what he doesn't know.
And he also knows what he can't control.
Yeah.
He can't control commodity prices. He also can't control Congress from spending money like crazy and, you know, our debt having to be financed. He's got blunt tools.
So exactly. That's exactly right.
To do a difficult job. So given all this, you know, given the conflicting economic reports, even companies are reporting different things depending on the company. It's interesting to hear. I feel a little bit like whiplash, you know. You think you've got some good data, and then the next data point is not good. And so what do you do? And I guess what we've done is we looked at 2022 and 2023, and they were mirror images of each other in terms of sector performance. We're talking about the S&P 500. And I think most investors are unaware that energy stocks were the clear winners over the entire two-year period. And technology, which and communications, which everybody was in love with, several of the Magnificent Seven, actually, you would have been better off owning energy for those 2 years than technology and communication services.
Right. Well, and so it's interesting because people don't always fully appreciate what happens with cumulative returns, particularly when you have a negative year followed by a positive year. So, you know, if you looked at technology stocks, they were down 28% in 2022, and they were up 56% in 2023. So some people might say, oh, okay, well, if you subtract 28 from 56, you've got, you know, 28% gains in technology. But that's actually not the way cumulative return works. So we thought we'd just run it through so you can see how it works. With a, say, $100 investment. I always get to do these boring things, I have to say. So please bear with me.
It's a very illustrative exercise because you see if you get $100 and it first goes down $28, even if it goes back up $56,
you end up $112,
right,
you know, which is only $12 ahead of where you started. So that's a 12% return over 2 years. It's not 28.
And everybody's all excited about technology and communications. Communications actually did worse, communication services, because it went down more and went up less. Whereas energy, where there is no love for these stocks, were up 64.2% in 2022. So you would be on $100, you'd have $164 and change. And then in 2023, they went down 0.6, almost nothing. So you had very little taken out of that $164. So you would have been better off.
Yeah, 64% versus 12.
Versus 12%. And if you ask most people, I think they would...
They would be more excited about technology.
Way more excited.
Well, you know, and they would be right if they just owned NVIDIA.
That's true.
As opposed to the whole technology market.
Anyway, given the reversal of sector trends in 23 from 2022 and the mixed messages for the economy that we've gotten thus far, we decided to take a more market sector-like approach. We reduced but maintained an overweight in energy and materials, so we still are overweighted. It's only a 5% of the S&P for energy.
And 2% for materials.
And 2% for materials. And we increased our exposure to technology and communications. I mean, with technology, it's about 28-30% of the S&P, dependent on the day. A lot of it is in 7 stocks. There are 2 stocks that are, 7% of the S&P each?
6 and 7.
6 and 7% of the S&P each. So, I mean, you couldn't even be called diversified if you... You know,
yeah, the official rule of a diversified fund is that you have no more than 5% in any one company.
So most managers and even mutual funds are not going to have, unless they're totally mirroring the S&P, they're not going to have those kinds of concentrations, and they certainly couldn't be called diversified. So we've gone closer to the market in all those sectors. And we also have taken healthcare to an overweight.
And why is that?
Because a couple of things. I mean, it's specific sectors within healthcare. I think pharma, I mean, these GLP-1 drugs are really miraculous. And I think the sector has not done well. So I think certain pharma stocks look really interesting to me. The companies that haven't done well are being forced to buy biotech companies. And I think a lot of great drug discovery is going on in biotech companies. So it's, you can buy a biotech index and exposure to a bunch of different companies that are kind of doing the clinical trials for the pharma companies. And then I think devices, which we've also always had a waiting to. I think that because of COVID, a number of operations did not take place that probably will, that could be delayed, so to speak. We're all getting older. We need hips and knees and all kinds of things. And my guess is that you'll start to see an increased procedures, which would help the device stocks. So that's kind of what our thoughts are for this year. You know, recently on 60 Minutes, I heard Fed Chair Jerome Powell say something that really resonated with me. He said, "Integrity is priceless. In the end, that is all you have. And we plan on keeping ours." Well, Chair Powell, so do we. That's all for now.
Yes, and if you'd like to visit our website and see the beautiful chart we have of the relative performance of the sectors in 2022 and 23, or have a written version of our article that we talked about today, please go to 2xwealth.ingalls.net.
That's all for now. See you next time.